Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on property is the holy grail of law when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. And we have now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs, and doctors to manage and treat our health problems, and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid legal professionals. Now, regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for our free general law CD package? It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send me an email. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Property. What is property? And I said property is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration. It's the holy grail of law, and oftentimes people, especially from the colonies, will call the law school and say, but will this work in Australia? Does this work in Canada? Does this work in Denmark? Or Slovenia, or the Czech Republic? And the answer is yes. Yes, it does. And how do I know that? It's because the law is really very simple. Law, in its final analysis, is simplicity. And it's been made complex for the purposes of charging money. I mean, we send somebody to law school for 5 years. And he comes out with his degree from college, you know, and now he's smart. He's a piece of paper now, says, I'm real smart because I've got a law school degree. And he knows some Latin words, and he speaks in a language that you and I don't understand. And, of course, that makes us believe that he's real smart. Now, really, there are 15 professions, and out of these 15 professions, law is one of them, and out of this 15th profession, law, it's the simplest of the professions to learn, the simplest to master. I know somebody's going to write me a letter now, and they're going to say, oh, come on, Gordon, there's more than 15 professions. Well, that's how many Bouvier's got listed, 15. It's kind of like the other day I was telling you that guy wrote me a letter, said he wanted a warranty deed, so I looked up a warranty deed in the dictionary, and a warranty deed is like a virgin whore. It doesn't exist. They're as common as pig tracks, but that's not one of the deeds listed in the definitions. There's six deeds in the definition of deeds. warranty deed is a creation for profit and gain. I mean, I'm not telling you that warranty deeds don't exist. It's just that it's not one of the forms of deeds. It's a hybrid. It's a creation for the purpose of selling it to you lay people out there that don't know what the hell a deed is. So we're going to sell you something. Had a guy here the other day. He bought a piece of ground, and he needed to have some gravel put on a piece of ground here, and so he went over to the gravel company. And Jimmy over at the gravel company sold him 12 loads of gravel to fill in a wet spot. I've been across that wet spot for the last 40 years, and we'd never put any gravel on it at all. Newton said he needed some gravel across there in order to get up there with his well drilling rig. And so this guy, he's a foreigner, and he went over to Jimmy, and Jimmy sold him 12 loads of gravel. He needed one, but he sold him 12. Well, lawyers do the same thing. See? A lawyer is in business to make money, and if he can sell you something that's worth $600, that's what he's going to make. But if he could turn around and sell you a whole lawsuit for $6,000, he's going to sell you the $6,000 lawsuit rather than the $600 court appearance or maybe a hearing or something. Doctors do the same thing. You know, you've got an ache or a pain. You go into the doctor, and he looks at you, and the next thing you know, you're scheduled for surgery. And why does the doctor schedule you for surgery? Well, because he has a boat or an airplane payment, or he has something, some expense coming up, and he needs $5,000 or $10,000, and so he sells you this surgery. Most of the surgery that goes on, by the way, in hospitals is unnecessary. Most, over half of the surgery being performed today is totally unnecessary. You don't need to have your gallbladder or your appendix or your tonsils removed. But, you know, they're professionals, and they're in the business of selling what they're selling. And, you know, if you're gullible and you want to buy it, then go ahead and buy it. Well, law is the same way. Now, one of the things that people are absolutely flabbergasted at, I have a class here called Courtroom Strategy and Procedures, 28 lessons, and there's 28 things that you need to know to walk into court and make a presentation. It isn't 366. It doesn't take 5 years to learn these 28 things. But every one of these 28 things is important. It's necessary and imperative. If you leave one of them out, you can't win, you can't succeed, you can't do it. But there isn't 29, 30, or 52. There's 28. Got that? I know I had a guy the other day, he called me, and he said he wanted a warranty deed. And so I said, well, I don't provide warranty deeds. I deal with quit claim deeds, QUITCLAIM DEEDS, quit claim deeds. That's what the young fellow, he was from Austin, Texas, said, well, he talked to his dad, he talked to his uncle, he talked to his friends, and they all said he's got to have a warranty deed. I said, well, you need to go buy ground from somebody else. You need to go talk to a real estate broker. You got to go talk to somebody. You got to go talk to the guy that sells warranty deeds. I'm not one of those. Now, why does this guy want a warranty deed? It's the only thing he knows. You know, I mentioned this the other day. I said, if you were to ask the average Joe Sixpack, how many different types of deeds are there? The answer is 6. Go look it up in the dictionary. I didn't make that up, you know. That isn't 1 Gordon 14:4. I'm just telling you. There's 6. Warranty deed is not one of them. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is because a guy calls me from Australia and he says, will this work in Australia? And the answer is yes. Anglo-Saxon. You people in Australia came from England, which is the origin of Anglo-Saxon administration. You people down there in Australia practice the same Anglo-Saxon law that Queen Elizabeth practices. Got that? And Canada and all the colonies out here. Now, there might be some differences over here in China and Outer Mongolia or someplace like that, Brazil. Now, but now, for the most part, those of us that are in all the colonies, and that includes almost all you black Africans, because Anglo-Saxon administration, you see, was imposed upon you South Africans and Zimbabweans and Rhodesians and, you know, all you people out there in Africa and Uganda and Chad and so on. You know, you came from European stock. Your law comes from European stock. I mean, you're black, but you're from European law. And yes, this works right where you're at. And furthermore, we have superimposed upon that now the Roman civil law. And this Roman civil law is very predictable. If the Apostle Paul were resurrected this morning, he'd be able to go into court anywhere in the world where they're practicing Anglo-Saxon administration, and he'd be able to practice law just like he did the day he died. And with a few minor exceptions, you know. He'd have to learn some of the local rules, you know, like which day of the week does the judge hold his motion hearings, but, you know, what the hell does that take to learn? So, when I talk about property being the holy grail of law, when you walk into court, the judge is only going to make a decision on two questions. That's all. I mean, the judge isn't sitting here saying, oh my God, how am I going to decide this case? It's very easy. The judge has a very easy job. He's going to decide, is this case based upon property or regulation? One or the other. And as soon as he makes that determination, he's ready to make his opinion. He's ready to write out his decision. This case is over. In most cases, when you walk into court and plead not guilty, case is over. Hell, I can tell you what the outcome's going to be. The minute you walk in and plead, I can tell you, okay, that guy's going to jail. Hey, that guy's going to be cut loose. And people, they wonder, well, how can you do that? Well, because it's simple. That's why. Now, we make things complex for monetary reasons. The reason that we go to college for 5 years to become a lawyer doesn't have anything to do with the complexities of law. It has to do with persuading people to spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to get a law degree. And that's why I don't charge $100,000, $200,000, or $300,000 for a law degree here at the law school, because law is the simplest of the 15 professions to master. There's no big deal about it. 28 things that you need to know. Now let me show you something here. I got a 9-year-old boy here on the farm. And yesterday, I was moving some hay with a Case Bobcat. Now a Bobcat is a little tractor-like affair with four wheels, with a very short wheelbase, and it doesn't have a steering wheel like normal tractors and cars and pickups and trucks. It has what's called steering clutches. And you have these two joysticks, one in the right hand and one in the left. When you push both joysticks forward, the machine goes forward. When you pull both of them back towards you, it goes backwards. When you pull one to the right and the other to the left, it'll spin like a top. You reverse that and it spins like a top in the other direction. And up in the top of the cab on the right side, there's a key sticking out. And when you turn that key clockwise, it engages the starter and starts the motor. All right. Now, here's this kid. He's 9 years old. This kid doesn't have a college degree. He has never been to a heavy equipment training school. He's just a little boy, 9 years old. Okay. Now, I want to teach this kid how to run this machine. How long does it take to teach a 9-year-old kid how to run a piece of machinery? Now, I don't know how smart this kid is. I don't have any way to test his IQ, but I'm going to guess the kid's average, and I think the average IQ is around 100, something like that. He's just an average run-of-the-mill kid. I don't think he's super smart. I don't think he'd ever make a Rhodes Scholar. He might. I wouldn't say he couldn't, but just an average run-of-the-mill kid. Well, I taught him how to run that machine in about 15 minutes. Now, you can go to heavy equipment school. You can go to truck driver school. I mean, you can go to college. You can go to community college. You can spend 2 years learning how to run equipment if you want to. Or you can come here and I can teach you how to run this thing in about 15 minutes, you know, assuming you're 9 years old. Now, I admit that 9 years might be a little young, but, you know, how old is old? How old do you have to be to learn? Has it ever occurred to us that that maybe this concept of waiting until a kid is 6 years old to send him to school, does it ever occur to you that maybe this kid could learn this when he's four, three, two? You know, how old do you have to be to learn how to read? How old do you have to be to learn how to write? How old? You know, we had children here, and we taught all of our children to read and write, and some of them are a little faster than others, and some of them take on a little. But, you know, you've got people today going to public school, and they have a curriculum, and they've got all these teachers and paid professionals. And then they're graduating 3 million a year that can't read and write. They're functional illiterates. What the hell is that all about? So you don't have to be real smart to figure out that the public school system may be able to teach some people to read, but they can't teach 3 million of them to read, because 3 million of them can't read. So I can teach a 9-year-old kid to run a piece of equipment in about 15 minutes. Now, does that make him a heavy equipment operator? Well, not quite yet. But by the time this kid has 2 hours of actual on-the-tractor experience, yeah, he'll be as good as, a guy that's 25, 30, 40 years old that's been to heavy equipment school and spent 2 years there and has a degree and a piece of paper. You know, in about 2 hours. You know, if he's average. And the same thing is true here with law. You know, you come here to the law school and you sit down. We call this on-the-job training. Now, when I was a kid, you know, before we had community colleges, you know, before we had college and university and all the horse pucky that goes along with it, you know, we had society here and we had people that learned. You know, people like Abraham Lincoln. Did you know that Abraham Lincoln was a lawyer? Did you know that Abraham Lincoln was president of the United States of America? Did you know that Abraham Lincoln never spent a day in law school? That's a fact. I just want to point that out. So there was a time in history when people could learn law without going to law school. And there was a time in America when you could go out on the job, on a job training, and learn how to run a cat, run how to bobcat, run how to logging truck, or learn how to run heavy equipment. So you don't have to spend a lot of time, effort, and energy. You have to have some skill and ability. You have to have some native moxie. You know, you're either cut out for this or not. Now, some people can learn things pretty fast, and some people can't learn them at all. Now, I tried to learn how to load logging trucks when I was a kid. Not a kid, you know, 22 years old. I was up in the woods, and there's a skill, there's a technique to loading logging trucks. And I never could master that. I can't load logging trucks to save my hiney. I can run cat. I can set chokers. And I can drive truck. There's all these skills and abilities that I have. And I learned law. And I can go into court and I can win about 90% of the time. I can't win every time, but I can win about 90. And I can teach you how to do the same thing. Hell, I can teach you how to run a bobcat. I can teach you how to run a cat. I can teach you how to drive a truck. And I don't need to spend years and years with community college or semesters and semesters of grade point averages and all the rest of the crap that goes with it. You know, it's just a matter of, come on over here, sit down in the seat, and let me show you how to start the motor. You know, let me teach you how this thing steers. And let me show you how the mast works and how the hydraulics work. You know, and you push that lever to the left, and here's what happens. You push it to the right, and the opposite thing happens. Now, it's true that if you've watched a guy run a piece of equipment, you know, they will develop a skill and ability. They'll feel it in their seat of their pants. They'll feel it in their shoulders. They'll feel it as the machine is moving, and then they will operate the blade or the mast or the forks, and it just kind of flows because you sit in the seat of the machine, and you can feel it. And you can operate the blade, and you can lay a road, you can spread gravel, you can just do all kinds of things. And different guys have different skills, and they're better than others. I don't deny that. But, hell, this 9-year-old kid can run that bobcat after about 15 minutes. Now, I've had him on it for about 30 minutes. By the time I've got him on it for a couple of hours, I'm going to get off the machine. I remember when I was flying airplanes, I started off, and you have to go through about, 25, 30 hours of dual instruction. You have an instructor in the airplane. And there comes a time when you solo. This is the big, you know, it's the bird leaving the nest. And so I remember Gene Roethlin, you know, we were doing takeoffs and landings, and he said, here, pull over off the onto the apron. And he did, and he opened the door, and he said, well, you're ready to solo. And he got out of the airplane and left me. And there I was, sitting in the airplane, the engine's running, and I'm all by myself. My instructor said, well, it's time for you to get out the nest and go fly. Now, some people, when they go out and fly for the first time on their own, they crash the airplane, kill themselves. Sometimes people, when they're learning how to drink, get off here with the wrong bunch of people, and they get to binge drinking, and they drink too much and kill themselves. Sometimes people, when they get ready to drive an automobile, they have very little experience, and they go out, and they're 16 years old and kill themselves by running. Well, it's part of the risks of life. But by and large, you know, if you're just an average Joe Sixpack living in Australia or Canada or someplace else, if somebody sat down with you and said, let me show you these 28 principles of law, 28 things that you need to know, and assuming, you know, that you're an average guy and you could master those 28 things, you could go in and practice law just like F. Lee Bailey, you know, or Johnny Cochran or anybody else. Now, how's that for a little boost, you know, to your self-confidence? Now, let's start off here with property, because property is the holy grail of law. And the first thing we have to determine is, are we dealing with regulations or are we dealing with property rights? That's the first thing we have to decide. That's what the judge is going to decide. That's what the prosecutor needs to decide. That's what you need to decide. And oftentimes people will come here to law school and they're really excited. And they jump up and down, they paw the ground, and bite the bushes, and they tell me their story. And then I have to give them the bad news. But son, you don't have a case. You don't have a case. They call me on the telephone. I say, well, okay, but you don't have a case. Social lady came and took my kid. No. Social lady didn't come and take your kid. Social lady came and changed babysitters. Now, once in a while, some guy actually owns a child. that's a rarity. If you want to know how many of you people out there own a child, it is so rare. You'll find teeth in a chicken's beak before you'll find somebody that actually owns a child. People aren't dealing with rights, they're dealing with privileges and immunities, and that's the way the Congress and the legislatures have set up these statutes and laws. And if you just walk into court and plead not guilty, I could just about tell you, well, you're guilty as hell and you're going to jail. Now, once in a while, there's an exception to that rule. Once in a while, there's some guy that's thinking outside the bun, but that's not the common, ordinary way to do that. So gather around here, boys and girls, and get your pencil and paper out here, and we're going to take a look at some stories that relate to a mere regulation in commerce and an actual property right. So let's start off here with Bouvier's definition of what is property. You know, the average guy doesn't know what property is. They think that property, as an example, you know, you probably are looking at your watch, you know, on your wrist, And you say, well, that's property. Well, it is. That's true. That watch on your wrist is property. But property is more than that. Property is more than that. Property not only is the thing, but it's the right to use the thing, which is also property. And a right is just as much property as is that watch. And so a question arises here. Well, are we dealing with property or are we dealing with the regulation and usage of property? Because if it's mere regulation and usage of property, then it's a privilege or a franchise. You don't have a right attached. That can be regulated and controlled under the Commerce Clause. Now, once in a while, some guy actually has a property right. Now, for practical purposes, all of the governments have removed the people by subtlety. They slowly but surely, by gradualism, have moved you people away from your property and property rights into commerce. privilege, immunities, and you're now regulated and controlled by regulation. You don't have a property right there. Now, Rosa Parks, remember the famous lady, you know, that rode the front of the bus? All right. She got on the bus and she exercised what she claimed at the time was her right to ride the front of the bus. After the case had wound its way through the judicial process, we got the answer. And the answer was, yes, she was dealing with a right. It wasn't a mere privilege or regulation. Now, they were treating this as a regulation in Alabama. They said black people have to ride the back of the bus and white people ride the front of the bus. Now, what they determined was, here's the judicial system. They bring this as a policy decision. They come up and they say, wait a minute. This law in Alabama is unconstitutional on its face. It's unconstitutional as it applies to everybody, period. And that occurs about 10% of the time. It's very rare. Very rare that a law, statute, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice is unconstitutional on its face. Generally speaking, a law is unconstitutional as it's being applied to a particular person or class of persons. And about 90% of the cases that come up for judicial review in the appellate process for a policy decision are in fact unconstitutional because it's unconstitutional as it's being applied. It's not unconstitutional on its face. It applies to a lot of people, but there's some people out there that it doesn't apply to. And so, you and I now, as the law students, we need to be able to differentiate between, is this law unconstitutional, or is this statute as it's being applied unconstitutional? See. Now, once we've made that determination, now we've got a case. Now we have to go adjudicate that case. Now here's an example of a law that's unconstitutional as it's applied. It's a case called Yoder versus Wisconsin. And in the Yoder case, a guy's an Amish man. He takes his children out of school at the end of the eighth grade. And in Wisconsin, they require that your children go to school till they're 16. That's to the 10th grade. And so the case is being adjudicated. It goes up to the Supreme Court. And they come back and they say, okay, this law, this compulsory education law, is constitutional on its face. When you're applying this law as a law of general applicability to Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, it's constitutional. Everybody has to send their children to school till they're 16. Well, but except for the Amish, they don't. Because that law is unconstitutional as it's applied to the Amish people. Because it violates the First Amendment's free exercise clause. It doesn't violate the Catholic's First Amendment free exercise, or the Protestant or the Jew, but it violates the Amish man's First Amendment free exercise. All right? And so, the court doesn't strike the law down and say this law has to be removed from the books. That law can stay on the books, and as long as we're applying it to the right classification of persons, Catholics, Protestants, and Jews can all be punished and sent to prison for not sending their children to school until they're 16, but not the Amish. All right, so now you and I then, when we look at this, sometimes people will say, well, that's unfair. No, it isn't. There's nothing unfair about that. And if it's unfair, that's in your mind. That isn't the state of the law. That isn't the way the law works. Now, if it's unfair in your mind, well, then, you know, get used to it and live with it because that's the way it is. Like it or lump it. Now, there's about 400 maxims of law. Now, a maxim of law is very important. For instance, here's a maxim. It says, the law does not expect you to do the impossible. What's impossible? Well, it's impossible for the Amish man to send his children to school because it violates basic core principles of his religious belief. And so the First Amendment's free exercise clause is more important than a mere rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice. And so law has different values. All right, let's take a look at a value. A constitutional provision like the right to keep arms or the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. See, that's a constitutional right. But that doesn't mean that the state can't come in and regulate the usage of those arms. It means that the state can't take away from you your right to keep and bear arms, but that doesn't mean that they can't regulate it by prohibiting you from carrying your .30-06 into the courthouse or into the local restaurant. Come on, wake up here, smell some coffee. And so what we do is we regulate a right until, for practical purposes, the right is no longer usable. Now, that's being done with automobiles. See, you have a basic and fundamental right to travel, but you do not have a right to travel by automobile. And the reason that you don't have a right to travel by automobile is because all of the automobiles are owned by the state. There isn't anybody out there that owns their automobile. They're driving somebody else's car. That's why the state can regulate your automobile. It's because you don't own it. Never did, don't now, and probably never will. But if you could own that automobile, now you'd have a piece of property. And property now is dealt with differently by the judge than is your mere privilege or franchise to use it. Now, the income tax has been attacked many, many times as being unconstitutional. There's nothing unconstitutional about income taxes. Now, I don't pay the income tax, but that's not because I'm a tax protester or because I'm an anarchist. It's because I don't have any income. See, I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And so the first question says, well, my God, how do you live? And the answer is, I live very well, thank you, without income. I deal in property. Property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. Property is not assessed and it's not taxed here. Now, that's a principle in Anglo-Saxon administration, and it's a case that comes from Diefendorf versus Galay. And you people in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and Western Europe, all of you people, Anglo-Saxons, wherever you are, have the same principle of law in your constitutions and in your laws that we have here. And that's because we're all from the motherland, England. We all come from the Mosaic Law at Mount Sinai. Now, how do you like that? Now, hang on, I got to give you a reminder here, and then we're going to take off on this thing called property right after this. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. these endorsements and recommendations that we're giving don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. We need to keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about property is the holy grail of law. And oftentimes people call here from around the world and they say, well, does this work in Brazil? Does this work in Canada? Does this work in Iceland? The answer is yes, it does. And that's because there's only two forms of law on planet Earth. Two. That's it. So when we look at the simplicity of this, you know, divorce it from college and 5 years of study hall and all the horse pucky that goes with it. We get right down to the nitty gritty. Well, there's only two forms of law on the planet, civil and common. You've got the Roman civil law, which has now replaced the common law, you know, for practical purposes. That doesn't mean the common law is done away with and dead and buried. It means that most people have been divorced from the common law and rights, and they have been shifted over to the civil law and franchise and privilege. That's all. And anytime you want to leave franchise and privilege and go back to the common law, you can. But, you know, a lot of times people will come in here and say, I'm a sovereign citizen. That's like somebody coming here saying, I am a virgin whore. It's an oxymoron. It's preposterous on its face. When you walk into court and you announce to the judge that you're a sovereign citizen, the judge doesn't engage you in a controversy or in an argument. He just thinks to himself, this fellow over here is suffering from the terminal stupids. This guy can't find his anus at high noon with a road map. He's just out of touch with reality. So I just do the same thing. People call the law school here, and they're talking about these crazy off the wall patriot ideas and common law courts, and oh my God, they're just on and on. It just preposterous poppycock, you know. If you want to see how valuable these moves are, go look it up in the literature and find out how many people have won doing that. You know, I got a case I did in the Ninth Circuit, and it's called Gordon versus Idaho. The difference is that you can go look up George Gordon versus Idaho in the literature, and there's the answer to the riddle. I'm not telling you this because it's my opinion. I'm telling you this because this is the way it works. It's like the little boy, son, get your butt up there in the seat, and put the seat belt on. Get your hand on the key, turn it clockwise, and let's start the motor. Okay? Now, I can teach a 9-year-old kid how to run that machine. Hell, I can teach a 70-year-old man how to run it. Teach anybody. There are just certain fundamentals that go together here. Now, same thing's true here with law. There's just certain fundamentals that go together here. I can teach anybody the law. In fact, you were instructed to teach your children the law. And you can't do that because you weren't instructed in the law. The creator of the universe wanted everybody on planet Earth, still does. He not only wanted past tense, he wants present tense, and he wants future tense. Every person on planet Earth to have a legal education. Because law is the foundation for civilization. You have to have rules. Got that? Rules. Somebody has to tell you when to stand up and sit down. When to shut up and when to speak. Now, incident to that are certain fundamental rights. Now, these rights fall into two categories. That's all there is, just two. It's either an inalienable right, or it's a conditional right or a franchise, a civil right. That's all. It's inalienable or civil. One or the other. No big mystery about it. If you got any more out there, I don't know what they are. So once we break this thing down into its simple components, and then once you master these little simple components, you're going to say, is that all there is? And I'm going to tell you, that's it, right there. That's all there is. That's how simple this thing is. Now, God expected you to teach your 9-year-old kids, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt do no murder, and, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, if a 9-year-old kid can learn adultery and theft and murder, well, then surely 20, 30, 40, 50-year-old people can do that. Now, if you're 50 years old and nobody ever taught you, thou shalt not steal, well, then, you know, join the club, because that's because you went to public school and they don't teach that there. That's what the bottom line is. You can go to law school and you can come out a fool, and that's because they didn't teach you the fundamentals. They didn't teach you what you needed to know. Now, property is the right and interest which a man has in lands and chattels to the exclusion of others. It is the sole and despotic dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world, in total exclusion of the right of any other individual in the universe. Did you get that word, universe? If God Almighty claims it, then you cannot own it. Now, surprisingly, there are some things that God Himself does not claim to own. Did you know that? There are some things out here, you know, not a whole lot, but there are some things. Your children, for instance. The Creator of the universe never claimed to own your children. He gave them to you. You created them. And then He instructed you as to how you should educate them, and you know how you should teach and train them. But He didn't come to you and claim to own them like Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of Texas, who says, yes, we own your children and we own you too. See? State of Texas claims to own your land. Now, to give you an illustration, there's a contested issue of fact here when we deal with land. We call it property. And a lot of times in law we use the wrong words. We use misnomers. We have things called property taxes. Now, I mentioned to you a little earlier here in this program, I said property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. And when I tell people that, the first thing that the students sitting at the table will do, they'll all raise their hands and say, but Mr. Gordon, there's a property tax. No, there isn't. Huh? No. Property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States of America. Not in the past, not now, not going to be in the future. It ain't possible. God Himself won't allow it. Can't tax property. You can tax what comes from property, but you can't tax the property. And that land out there isn't property. Land is land. And you can hang labels on it. See? You can call a whore a virgin if you want to, but that doesn't make it true just because you call it that. You can call it a warranty deed if you want to, but hell, it doesn't make it that way. So we hang labels. We use words incorrectly. And in so doing, we're unable to communicate. We have wrong impressions and wrong ideas. And that oftentimes is not done accidentally. It's done on purpose to lead you down a rabbit trail so that you can't ever figure out what the correct modality is here for you to establish a right and then exercise it. But then, you know, that's your problem in life. You need to overcome that. But property is not being taxed. Now, this property tax that you call on your house, you know, or your land, that's not a property tax. It's an ad valorem tax. Now, go look up that word, ad valorem. Can you say ad valorem, boys and girls? What's even more important, can you spell it? Because if you can't spell it, you can't look it up. Ad, A-D-V-A-L-O-R-U-M, ad valorem tax. It's a value-added tax. So the tax on your house isn't a tax on your property. It's a tax on the value of the house. It's a tax on the value. Think about it. The assessor comes out and he says, well, your house is worth $100,000 and we're going to tax it at 30 mils. And a mil is 1/1000th of a dollar. So we're going to tax it 30 mils or $300 a year, $100,000 house. All right, so your house then has a value applied to it, and then they tax the value of the house. It appears to be a tax on your house, on your property, but it's not. Income tax. See, it appears that the income tax is a tax on your labor, but it's not. It's not, Don. That's why it's constitutional to engage in this income tax. See, that's because they removed you from property. They removed you from gold and silver. Back in 1933, President Roosevelt closed the banks and had Congress enact House Joint Resolution 192, and they took your gold away from you. When they took your gold away from you, they took away your power, your capacity to pay your debts at law. So they gave you Federal Reserve notes, which are commercial instruments. Now, these commercial instruments are being regulated and controlled under the Commerce Clause. And because they're under the Commerce Clause, commerce is being regulated and controlled. And so what they're doing is regulating and controlling your use of commerce, not your right or your use of property. And your labor is property. So what they've got you doing is converting your labor into commerce and then taxing the commerce. What they've got is you converting your house, which is your property, into value, and then are taxing the value. All right, now these are little subtle tricks that are being used to regulate and control you. So we have to move you away from property. And when we do that, we move you away from the Ten Commandments, and we put you over here under the Ten Planks. That's the way that game is being played. Now, property in the strict legal sense is an aggregate of rights which are guaranteed and protected by the government. And in the ordinary sense, it indicates the thing itself rather than the rights attached to it. So in the ordinary sense of property, we think of it in terms of the thing itself. Ah, but when your mind is on things, then it's not on the right to use it. And you also have a right to use it. And if I take away from you your right to use it, then I've taken away and impaired your property rights. And we can't do that. Well, not without due process and equal protection of the laws. So we're going to get into some examples here of the distinctions now between property and regulation. Government can regulate you to death, and there's nothing you can do about that. But regulation is done with your consent. You know, this is what Abraham Lincoln said. You know, the people are governed by the consent. You know, government exists by the consent of the governed. Now, if you want to consent to be governed by this foreign and alien god called the United States or Canada or Australia, you can do that. But you were told not to. Your creator told you, you shall have no other gods before me. And, of course, most of us, being smarter than God, we said, oh, no, we need another god in here called Australia and a legislature or a parliament to make our laws for us. Well, okay, you can do that if you want to. You have free moral agency. I mean, God isn't over here kicking your hiney yet. He's going to, but hasn't done it yet because of the violation of these laws, rules, customs, usages, and practices. What he's doing here is letting you learn from your mistakes and your experience. Now, Henry Ford once made an observation. He said, you will learn more from your mistakes than you will from your successes. Well, that's what my old daddy said was learning by the school of hard knocks. He said, experience is the best teacher, but it's a god-awful hard way to learn. Now, science is learning from experience. And this is what they're selling in your public schools. So you need to experiment. You need experience. We can't believe revelation. But see, revelation is the more logical. Think about this for a minute. Revelation's the more logical modality to learn. This 9-year-old boy could learn to use that machine by his own experience. He could just get on the machine and start experimenting. But in the process, he's probably going to tip it over backwards, or he's probably going to roll it off the hill. He's probably going to carry the load too high and tip it forward and throw himself out and kill himself in the process. This 9-year-old boy, we're not letting him learn from experience. We're letting him learn through revelation. And the revelation comes from the instructor. See, I'm the teacher. I'm the expert on the Bobcat. I really know how to use that Bobcat. I am god-awful good on that machine. I can start it and stop it. I can turn it left and right. I can pick up loads and move it. Hell, I can pick up loads with that machine that'll tip it over forward. Then I can carry the load low enough that I can pick up loads that the machine isn't even designed to pick up and carry, and I can move them around. I can unload trucks with that machine, and I don't even have a counterweight on it. I am very skilled. Now, would it be better for this child, 9-year-old child, to learn how to use that Bobcat from his own experience and experimentation? You know, like tip it over a few times. You know, get thrown off of it a time or two. I mean, he'll learn. If he survives, he'll learn from that. But wouldn't it be better if I were to explain to him, son, the reason we keep the load low over here is to keep it from tipping over. The reason that we operate the machine this way and that way and another way over here is to prevent accidents and to prevent damage to the machine, to prevent getting killed. Let me give you a quick illustration here. I'm a little boy, so I'm 12 years old. My dad calls me in the kitchen one day and he says, son, you're 12 years old. It's time for you to learn how to drink. Wow. 12 years old. This is the dream of every 16-year-old punk kid. I'm going to go out and have a beer. Now, I don't know about most of you people out there, but whiskey, vodka, tequila, they taste bad. You know that? People don't drink because of the taste of this crap. I mean, this stuff tastes god-awful terrible. Anybody that says beer tastes good, you know, this guy's spaced out on something. He's smoking something that's really good. This stuff tastes awful. The reason that we drink is for the effect. We like the effect. It's like spinning around, you know. You do that because you want the effect. You smoke cigarettes for the effect that you get from it. Makes you dizzy and lightheaded and feels good. See? That's why we smoke. That's why we drink. That's why we go to the whorehouse, because it feels good. Now, if it feels bad, you know, like sticking your finger in the stove and burning yourself, you know, on a hot surface over here, that's painful. That doesn't feel good. That's why we avoid, when you're welding a piece of metal and it's glowing red hot, that's why we don't reach down and pick it up with our bare hands. We've already done that a time or two. And it felt so bad, we said, no, we don't want to do that again. All right, so you learn from these experiences, don't you? So my dad wanted me to learn from revelation and instruction how to drink. Now, I'm 70 years old. I have never been out binge drinking, trying to drink a quart of whiskey in one sitting. I never did do that, as is evidenced by the fact that I'm here and I'm 70 years old. And everybody who goes out and drinks a quart of whiskey in one sitting dies from it. And how do I know that? Just read the Reader's Digest, and about every month or two they'll have a story in there about binge drinking on the college campus. And here's this 19-year-old girl, and she went out binge drinking, and she was out just drinking, having a good time, and then she just passed out drunk, and nobody knew what to do. And that's because nobody has explained to these people. I mean, they're 19 years old, and they don't know how to drink. And so they're out experimenting.
unlike my daddy, who sat me down at the kitchen table, and he said, let's have a drink. And so he mixed a highball, and he explained to me how Four Roses whiskey mixes with Coke, and this is called a highball, and here's how, and it tastes a lot better, see? And then there's an effect that comes from that, and my dad explained to me about body weight, and then about how much alcohol you can consume. And if you're a big man, you can consume more more alcohol with less effect. And he said, just it's a narcotic, and then this thing is going to make you go to sleep, and this is why you can't drive your car after you've been drinking too much. So I learned how to drink by revelation. I didn't learn how to drink by experimentation. And many people who learn to drink by experimentation don't kill themselves, and they survive it, and they live through it, and they learn by experimentation. But it's not the better way to learn how to do this. That's the moral to my story. Now, if you need to learn by experimentation, get out there and do it. But don't throw rocks now at revelation. And that's what the Bible is. It's a book of revelation. It's a book that comes from the creator of the universe, and he says, hey, I've been there, done that. Run that by me first. Let me explain to you how that works. So he's already told you, this adultery thing, you want to go out and you want to tear off a piece on Friday night down at Flo's, okay? It's called AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, watch out for that one. That's a sleeper. You can find out about AIDS, herpes, and VD accidentally by experimentation, but it would be better for you. It would be less painful. You'll live longer. You'll have better results if you could learn that lesson by revelation. Now, when we deal with law, deal with property and property rights, you can learn by experimentation. You can marry with a marriage license and go out and just have a great time, and then you'll get a result from it. Or you could go out and you could marry based upon revelation with a patriarchal marriage without a marriage license, and you'll get a different result. I don't know which one you're going to prefer. I always suggest to people that they get all of the facts. You know, how many types of marriage are there? There's three. Why don't you take a look at Revelation and see what happened to people that had a civil law marriage, common law marriage, and a patriarchal marriage? And why don't you ask them what the results were? Then why don't you make an informed decision as to what you want to do based upon their experience? Let somebody else burn his hand. Let somebody else kill himself drinking on a binge drink. Let's watch and see what happened to that guy. Then they'll tell us, you know, do we want to do that? Now, if you want to kill yourself binge drinking, you know, well, then get after it. If you want to live to be 70, then you got to get off the binge drink, because that'll probably kill you. Now, when we apply this to law, when we come into court, the question arises, do you want to win or lose? That's all. Do you want to win or lose? Do you want to go to jail or not? Did you want to have the government come in and fine you and take a bunch of your property away from you? Or did you want to keep the property and let somebody else pay those fines? Those are choices that we all have to make. And we all make those choices. You know, whether you're making it consciously or unconsciously, you're making those choices. So God comes along and he says, now listen, you know, choose life. I'm going to set before you life and death. I'm going to set before you good and evil. Choose good, choose life, avoid death, avoid evil, and it'll be better for you. But, you know, the mere fact that you've got the power to choose is very important. The choice is yours, and that's what we're going to do. We're all going to make that choice, like it or lump it, and then you're going to have to live with it. Hey, I'm about out of time here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right here, and we'll be back talking about property. He has the holy grail of law. Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, meanwhile, you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is upgraded weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.